Hello, I'm Tristan Brand. This is number 0486, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0486. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, Herbie J. Pilato, the author of Mary, the Mary Tyler Moore story. Now, during her lifetime, Mary wrote two autobiographies. So why did Herbie feel that he needed to put his spin on her life?
She certainly was as honestly as she could about her life. She talked about her plastic surgery. She talked about the tragedies in her life, losing her son, her sister, her brother. I mean, her parents were not the nicest towards her. So she addressed all of that. But there's this whole depth of insight, really, from an objective standpoint that needed to be addressed.
Clinical forensic psychologist Dr. John Huber talks about the PC backlash on Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and Baby It's Cold Outside.
It does bother people, but for the wrong reasons. You know, they're worried about getting somebody's feelings hurt, and what they really need to worry about is teaching people how to deal with conflict, because even if it's not in the movies or not in TV, it's still in real life. And when we don't have role models, when we don't have people who set the standards higher for us, we're never going to learn as a society how to overcome conflict and deal with things that are always going to be a part of life, period.
Travel expert Pete Trabucco on ideas for winter vacations over the holidays. Many northern parks like Hershey Park stay open in the winter.
Since about 20 years ago, the amusement parks have realized, why not extend the seasons in the north? Keep the places open. People love amusement parks, and they also love, you know, the holidays. It's a great time to do that. Plus, there's 4 million lights over at Hershey Park where you can do a drive-through there, so it's actually an amazing place to be.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0486 was photographer Tristan Brand, who is an amazing photographer and an even more amazing human being. Thank you very much, Tristan, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff. Okay, I have to start this first story by saying that I've never had a roommate. I don't think I would have done well living in a situation with roommates, and I would always be worried about ending up with the roommate from hell. And this story just solidifies my belief, although one has to do due diligence when selecting a roommate. For instance, don't move in with a roommate who owns a shotgun, and also try to make sure your potential roommate doesn't think he is some kind of vigilante. That way, you probably won't end up handcuffed to a chair like this nightmare scenario. It started when 45-year-old Jason D. Mon of Salt Lake City, Utah, suspected his roommate of assaulting a woman. But instead of going to the police, he decided to take the matter into his own hands. Mon allegedly held a shotgun to his roommate's head and made the man sit in a chair before handcuffing him. Mon told the victim he could either be taken to the desert to be killed, or Mon would drive a nail into the victim's penis. Ooh, lovely choices. Mon then allegedly threatened to shoot the victim if he attempted to fight back. After the victim chose the latter option, Mon allegedly used a rusty hammer to drive an ice pick-like tool through the victim's penis and into a 2x4 board placed under the victim. The suspect released the man and told him to leave. He sought medical attention at the hospital the following day. The following day? Wow, he must have a very high pain threshold. Anyway, Mon was charged with first-degree felony aggravated kidnapping, first-degree felony sexual assault, second-degree felony aggravated assault, and second-degree felony mayhem. It should be noted that police found no evidence that the roommate assaulted any woman, which means, considering the charges he's facing, if you're deciding between the two for which one is guilty of sexual assault, it's definitely Jason D. Mon. Okay, again, as far as I'm concerned, if someone nailed Jim and the twins to a 2x4, I'm not waiting the next day to go to the hospital. Oh, hell no. Anyway, after rear-ending a woman stopped at a traffic light in Iona, Florida, a sheriff deputy asked the driver how it happened. 40-year-old Travis Howard says he didn't remember. When asked for his driver's license, Howard handed over a hotel key. After failing several sobriety tests, Howard was arrested, charged with DUI. On the way to jail, Howard forgot where he was and where he was going. "Uber," he asked the deputy, "when we get to my room, can I go to bed?" The deputy told Howard he wasn't riding in an Uber and was going to jail. Okay, this guy is the purest definition of completely blotto drunk. He doesn't realize he's in the back of a police cruiser on his way to jail. And let's take this one rung deeper. When do you ever ask a cab or Uber driver if you can go to bed? Actually, even if you're staying at a motel with parking right outside your door, when has a cab or an Uber driver driven you directly to your bed? Now that's seriously drunk. A man trying to check out at a market in New Orleans was 15 cents short and asked the customer behind him to front him the coins. "No," the other customer said, so the man pulled a gun on him. The other customer quickly handed over a quarter and the robber fled without taking his groceries. What a moron. And also the most literal example of a two-bit crook. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, it was an honest mistake. Scottish mother Helen Cox needed an outfit for her 5-year-old son, Alfie, who had a role in the school nativity play. So she went online to buy a shepherd costume and decided to supplement the outfit with a blow-up sheep. What she didn't realize was the sheep was a sex doll designed for those who prefer their partners of the woolly persuasion. The school told Alfie to bring the doll home. When it was observed, it had a hole in its butt as well as red lips and eyelashes. "I just can't believe it. I don't know whether to laugh or cry. How am I going to explain this to his teachers?" Helen said. "He's probably in his room right now stuffing Legos in the hole." Okay, first of all, now that she knows what it is, why hasn't she deflated it and put it out of reach of Alfie? I mean, if he's playing with it, he's going to talk about it at school now, which will lead to people asking all kinds of questions.
What's it all about, Alfie?
Remember when the worst thing that could happen in your house concerning Lego was that you stepped on a piece with your bare feet? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Herbie J. Pilato is back on the program. He has a new book out about the actress who could turn the world on with her smile. The book is Mary, the Mary Tyler Moore story. And Herbie joins us on the line right now from California. Hi, Herbie.
Hi, Anthony. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. You've written this book about Mary Tyler Moore, and Mary herself had the opportunity to write not one but two biography. So what are you adding to what she has already done in her own time?
Well, you know, there were also biographies about her from the 70s and the 1980s, and she certainly as honestly as she could about her life, and I give her props for that. You know, she talked about her plastic surgery, she talked about the tragedies in her life, losing her son, her sister, her brother. I mean, her parents were not the nicest towards her. So she addressed all of that. But there's this whole depth of insight, really, from an objective standpoint that needed to be addressed. And there was this whole bunch of her career that she really didn't talk about simply because she didn't have the time to talk about it and didn't get to the third book. And a whole lot of living that she did before, during, and after the Dick Van Dyke Show and the Mary Tyler Moore Show. I mean, she did a ton of guest spots on TV shows before Dick Van Dyke, and I address all of those and I discuss those in depth. And she did many personal appearances after her second book came out, which I believe was 2008. So, and her marriages, you know, and I tried to be as objective as I could, taking what she said about her life a few steps further.
Now, you've written several books, and the thing I'm always curious about is what is it about a particular subject when you decide that you're going to write a book about them? What led you to wanting to share this story about Mary Tyler Moore?
Well, I wanted to continue the what I started really with Elizabeth Montgomery, Twitch Upon a Star. She also, like Mary, was a very complicated person, but she was from the 1960s. She was a TV star in the 1960s, and I was trying to continue that theme. Now, strangely enough, there were similarities between the two, besides the fact that they were both stars of 1960s TV shows, Elizabeth Bewitched and Mary the Dick Van Dyke Show. They both had demanding fathers. They both had fathers who did not want them to go into the entertainment industry. Even Elizabeth, whose father was a movie star, Robert Montgomery. They both were attracted to older men. They both felt stereotyped by their TV roles, and they went on to do TV movies that were very different from Mary Richards on The Mary Tyler Moore Show and Laura Petrie on The Dick Van Dyke Show and Samantha on Bewitched. And then they even did a similar movie where they both had a black wig on and they were murderous moms. So it just seemed like that there was something going on. There was a connection that I wanted to continue on that I started with Twitch Upon a Star that I'm bringing into Mary, the Mary Tyler Moore story.
And if I'm not mistaken, both of them were also married to the producers of their hit shows.
You know, absolutely. And that's a really good point. I have found in writing these books and in studying classic TV that when the show was over, more times so is the marriage. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, Mary and Grant Tinker, who was her husband and producer on the show, you know, that the relationship was based on the show, but kind of, sort of, after the Mary Tyler Moore Show ended, you know, their marriage really ended as well, only lasted a couple more years when they could not find another vehicle for her for television. Same thing happened with Elizabeth Montgomery and William Asher, who was the director and producer on Bewitched and married to Elizabeth. Once Bewitched was over, so was the marriage. Same thing happened with Carol Burnett and Joe Hamilton on The Carol Burnett Show. When that show ended, Joe Hamilton and Carol Burnett ended their marriage. Even Sonny and Cher, when the Sonny and Cher Show, kind of happened at the same time. The Sonny and Cher Show ended, Comedy Hour ended, when their marriage ended. Now, again, I'm not saying that these people get together and say, hey, let's get married and then let's have a TV show. It's just that people in the industry are attracted to one another because they want to work with each other, and the marriage and the business gets all intertwined.
Now, we were talking off air just before we started. I mentioned the fact that, and as I said in the introduction, she is the woman who is known for turning the world on with her smile, as the song of her television show says. But the thing I found most fascinating about her was the fact that when she had a chance to star in a more dramatic role, where she was nominated for an Academy Award, and I think she was robbed that year, she played a mother, a horrible mother, in Ordinary People. And I remember walking out of the movie theater and actually calling her the B word under my breath, saying that about Mary Tyler Moore. And I'm thinking, wow, for her to totally evaporate from what we knew as Mary from her roles on television and other movies she had done, to then take on this role and be something that we have never seen before, that was an amazing acting role on her part.
Well, yes, it was. And it was a daring thing. It was something she really needed to do to find some kind of presence beyond television. And it certainly came at a time, at a perfect time in her life in 1980 when nothing really was happening for her. And she had failed movies in the 60s after the Dick Van Dyke Show. You know, she did things like Change of Habit, where she played a nun with Elvis Presley as a surgeon. Okay. But with Ordinary People, she really, really delivered a knockout performance. However, she was cast in that role because the director of that show, Robert Redford, who was a neighbor of hers in Malibu, had noticed one day while she was bathing in the sun, for some reason, that there was a darker side to Mary, okay? That he saw something in her that day on the beach, on the sand, somehow, that said that maybe that she can do this role. Now, Mary was a complicated person, you know? Just like we're all complicated people, which we talked a little bit about before we got on the air here. So when you're writing a book like this, it's a tough job. With Elizabeth, it was even tougher because I knew her. And I said, how am I going to write an honest story about someone who is very complicated but who was my friend without hurting her family? And the same thing with Mary. Even though I did not know Mary, it was still someone that I loved and that millions of people loved. How am I going to tell this story about the complicated person that she was without sounding like it's, you know, salacious? And, you know, in both times, I feel that I chose a very dignified way to tell a story, talk about these complicated women in a very honest way, you know, because you have to tell the truth, but it's how you tell it is really the key. And I think I've told it with both times with dignity.
Have you had the opportunity to reach out to her family, her widower?
I did. I reached out to him for an interview through his representatives, which was probably a mistake. I should have gone directly to him, but they said that he would not be interested in. So I did not get an interview with him. But I did interview Gavin McLeod, Ed Asner, Larry Matthews, who played Little Richie, Bill Persky on the Dick Van Dyke Show. Bill Persky, who's one of the producers on the Dick Van Dyke Show and became one of her good friends. Carol Channing, who was her co-star from Thoroughly Modern Millie. Joyce Bulafon, who was also from the Mary Tyler Moore Show. Sam Bobrick and a lot of writers and producers and who were involved with her through the years. Betty Rowland, who she played in First You Cry, which was her first TV dramatic role after the Mary Tyler Moore Show, which was a groundbreaking movie in itself, First You Cry, where she played Betty, who had breast cancer. She was a journalist, a real-life journalist, and Mary played that role. So I interviewed as many people as I could, and what's really cool about the book is that I've also went to videos, rare video footage of Mary, who, you know, her commentary that's never been published anywhere. And I resourced all of the previous books and hundreds, if not thousands, of articles. I worked so hard on this book. This book is the best book, I think, I've ever written.
You mentioned Joyce Bulafon, which kind of brings us full circle because she was the next Mrs. William Asher.
Oh, absolutely. That's absolutely correct. She and Bill got married, and then he left, and then they separated, and then Bill got married a fourth time. It was really funny because I was invited to an 80th, I think it was his 80th, birthday party that I could not attend to, unfortunately, of Bill Asher. And all the different children, from what I heard, all the different children from all the different marriages were walking around with little name tags saying, yes, I'm the daughter of Bill Asher from his second marriage, and I'm the son of Bill Asher from his first. I mean, I thought that was wonderful that they were able to do that. And you know what? In Hollywood, look, it's like the name of the game. More times than not, you're going to get divorced, so you got to deal with it, and everybody handles it as best they could. So I thought that was cool.
Well, you say this book is you feel is the best you've ever written. It's called Mary, the Mary Tyler Moore Story. I know you can get it on Amazon.com, but you also can get it online at your site?
Well, you can't get it on Amazon.com until January 25th. That is the actual formal pub date. To pre-order, you can go to my publisher's website, which is jacobsbrownmediagroup.com, or, as you say, you can go directly to my website at herbiejpilato.com, and you can pre-order there, or you could email me directly, and you can get a personally signed copy through hjpilato, P-I-L-A-T-O, at yahoo.com.
Herbie, thank you very much for being on the program with us once again.
Thank you so much, and happy holidays, everybody.
Herbie J. Pilato, author of Mary, the Mary Tyler Moore Story. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0486, and you'll find links to Herbie's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File Program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at Patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. Coming to you from the outskirts of sanity, this is the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk about the backlash against Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Plus, we'll share some Christmas vacation ideas. We do indeed have an Idiot of the Day coming a little later on. Plus, much more Stuff File news here on the Stuff File Program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can also be heard via Google Play and iTunes. Just click on the Google Play or iTunes button located on the website at thestufffile.com. And whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Anyway, let's get back to the stuff. An unnamed substitute teacher in Montville, New Jersey, won't be returning to Cedar High School after revealing sacred secrets to first graders there on November 29th. Superintendent Renee Rovtar said the sub got into a debate with a student about whether Santa is real. That's when the six-year-old started quizzing her about the Easter Bunny, Tooth Fairy, and the Elf on the Shelf, and the teacher proceeded to debunk all of it. Parents reported doing damage control after the kids returned home from school, and the sub is no longer welcome in the district. Okay, admittedly, that's what one can call being in a tough situation. I mean, it's not like the teacher blurted out the answers unsolicited. She was asked a question. Still, it was not in that teacher's place to debunk a myriad of childhood icons. If I were that teacher, I would have simply said that there are some things that kids are only allowed to discuss in detail with their parents. And suspected car prowler, 31-year-old Isaiah John Galately of Vancouver, Washington, was going about his business late on November 19th when Happy Valley police were called. Responding officers found Galately lying fully reclined in the driver's seat of a Honda Accord, matching the suspect vehicle's description. Suddenly, Galately sat up and sped away, leading to a pursuit and the use of spike strips. As his ability to control the car decreased, police said Galately opened the door to flee, but forgot to put the Honda in park, so it rolled alongside him as he ran. Eventually, he tried to run in front of it, and the car hit a tree, a building, and Galately, breaking one of his legs. Suspected stolen items found in the car included a tennis racket, a ping pong paddle, and a Texas Instruments calculator. Begging the question, was all that really worth a broken leg? And rarely do people outrun the car they are stealing, and wouldn't it have made more sense for him to run in a different direction than the car was going? Just asking.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
This is an important self-serving promotional bulletin. My book, Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars, is still available. And like the title says, within the pages you'll find some of my celebrity encounters with Oscar winners like Carl Malden, Cloris Leachman, and Christopher Plummer. Emmy winners like Ed Asner, Michael Moriarty, and Lindsay Wagner. Tony winners like Carol Channing and Julie Newmar. A host of TV icons, plus two guys who left their footprints on the moon. Order it now. It's available in hardcover, softcover, and for your e-reader on Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, as well as at my publisher's website at BearManorMedia.com. All links are on our website at TheStuffFile.com. So, buy the book. What are you waiting for? This has been an important self-serving promotional bulletin.
I love you. Now, back to our show.
A woman in a drive-thru of a McDonald's in Santa Ana, California, was unsatisfied with how the restaurant filled her order. Enraged, she allegedly came in through the employee entrance and demanded more ketchup. The manager told her she was not allowed in the employee area, and then the beating erupted, said Police Corporal Anthony Britannia. There's no reason to physically assault someone because you didn't get enough ketchup, the corporal said. It took about a month to identify and arrest 24-year-old Myra Berenice Gallo, who is charged with assault. Wow, more than a month to identify the suspect? Wow, this case is moving slower than, well, ketchup. And still with McDonald's, a driver is counting the cost of a very expensive Happy Meal after his car was seized when he was caught speeding. The motorist told officers that he was concerned that his food might get cold after he overtook an unmarked police car on a single-track road near Sheffield, England. However, after his details were checked, it was found that he wasn't insured for his VW Golf, and his car was seized by police. I love the quote from a spokesman for South Yorkshire Police. It's been a positive night shift on the beat. This vehicle driver decided to overtake our officers in an unmarked vehicle at excessive speeds, putting everyone's life at risk. All because he didn't want his McDonald's to get cold. It just so happened this vehicle wasn't insured either. It's safe to say the driver wasn't loving it. Our version of a takeaway was arranged, and the driver waved goodbye to his vehicle. Ouch. Okay, in defense of the driver, I just have a simple question for all of you out there. Winter, spring, summer, or fall, is there anything that goes cold faster than McDonald's French fries? I mean, they go from hot to railway spikes in literally seconds. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Every year at this time, the television networks roll out their holiday programming, bringing out perennial shows that have played for decades. CBS, as usual, aired Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and got a little backlash from the political correct pundits out there. What has this world come to? That's the question we put to clinical forensic psychologist Dr. John Huber. He's the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, which is a nonprofit organization. John joins us on the line from Texas. Hi, John.
Hello, Peter. Thanks for having me on today.
Thanks for being on the program with us once again. It seems to be, with all the political correctness going on today, that there will never be a new show or new movie or new anything that seems to have conflict, because conflict really bothers people.
Well, it does bother people, but for the wrong reasons. You know, they're worried about getting somebody's feelings hurt, and what they really need to worry about is teaching people how to deal with conflict, because even if it's not in the movies or not in TV, it's still in real life. And when we don't have role models, when we don't have people who set the standards higher for us, we're never going to learn as a society how to overcome conflict and deal with things that are always going to be a part of life, period.
So when you heard this story, what was the first thing that went through your mind? And bear in mind, this is a family program.
Well, first thing is I started laughing just to no end, because it's like, okay, just one more thing that they're going to tear and cut away that has become part of American culture. It's almost like, oh, well, we can't celebrate it because, you know, it is American culture. And they, you know, they make up these, oh, it's all about homophobia and racism, when in fact, it's actually about overcoming adversity. It's about overcoming what almost every human being feels at some point, like they've been isolated and segregated because of something to do with themselves, real or imagined, and overcoming those fears, overcoming those threats, and making something of your life. And that's what life is about, making something out of our life, even though nobody else wants to support us, or because people don't believe in us. you have to do it yourself. And it takes work, it takes charismatic personality, and it comes from a drive that you have. But it also comes from watching other people go through those types of things. And what better example than a Christmas icon to follow? It just, you know, we know it's fictitious. We know that it's not, you know, a real person that has a nose that lights up. That's not the point. The point is he overcame adversity. And, you know, you can even sit there and break it down even more. I mean, Santa Claus is the ultimate politician.
Okay.
I mean, and he's sitting there as this politician, and he is at first agreeing with the crowds. Oh, no, Rudolph, you have to go. You're different. But then once he needs Rudolph, he's accepting. And Rudolph surpasses all of that, and he becomes this ultimate human being by saying, hey, I forgive all y'all. I'm going to go out there and help y'all. You guys need to realize that there are differences in this world, and I'm a prime example of it.
And then he was allowed to enjoy reindeer games. How lovely.
Exactly. But, you know, they kept him out of the bars anyhow because he was a rowdy drunk. So,
you know, the thing, you know, this story has come along, and following that story is the one where the song Baby It's Cold Outside has been pulled from many radio stations because the term being used is it's rapey.
Misogynistic at the very least, yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, it goes to show how, again, you know, what is the avenue for men to try and flirt with and convince another person that they're worthy of their time and that they should have a relationship with them. And it's, you know, we're beating ourselves up all the way around. The whole idea of political correctness, you know, the intent is well and admirable, but,
you know,
we have to realize that there's injustice in this world. We still have to learn how to deal with it.
I think the listeners of the song should take into consideration the tone of the voice of the woman involved. Because she's not quivering. She doesn't sound scared. You know?
Right.
they're just taking the words verbatim and not taking the inference in the tonality of the two people who are singing the song.
Well, and it's easy to say that for you and me, but when you look at the generations coming up where most of their communication is through text, they don't get those nonverbal cues because they're not there anymore and they're not learning how to interpret them and experience them appropriately. You know, when they can't even shake your hand and look you in the eye while they're doing it because they don't know to do that, and we expect them to listen to a woman's voice and identify whether she's under duress or not.
Well, since we're talking about Christmas songs, I'm going to throw you a curve right now. Because this is something I've always said about Christmas music, which, by the way, I do love. But let me get your thought on this. I tend to believe that most, if not all, popular Christmas music, to a certain degree, is depressing. And the reason why I say that is if you listen clearly to the lyrics of most popular songs, it's sung by someone who is in a lonely situation. For instance, I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. I'm not having one. I'm reminiscing about Christmases past that were great. I'm not having that now. Blue Christmas by Elvis. Pick any song you want. It's got a depressing undertone to it, and no one's ever talked about these things.
And half the Christmas movies are depressing. You know, Miracle on 54th Street. Man, I hate
34th
that movie.
Street, yeah.
It's so depressing. I just want to cry during the whole thing. And, you know, Grandma wants to sit down and watch it three times this year. And I'm like, no, it's not happening.
And I'm surprised. I mean, I can see why the politically correct police would go after Baby It's Cold Outside. But there's so many other songs that in a time when one of the trigger words is the word trigger.
Right.
I'm surprised these Christmas songs haven't sent bells off for a lot of the generation that seems to be upset by everything.
Well, it finally has, and that's the thing. You know, what's next? Are we going to go after the Easter Bunny?
Well, at least, you know, so far, no one's tested any cosmetics on the Easter Bunny, so that's a plus.
Yeah, but look at all the M&Ms he's had to eat and jelly beans. So.
Oh, well, that brings us right back to that hefty guy who squeezes down a chimney every year.
Exactly. I'm waiting for the, you know, diabetics of the world to stand up and go after the Easter Bunny. But, you know, Santa Claus, we know, we give him sugar, we give him cookies and milk every year. And that's just the way it is. He gets his insulin before he leaves, and I think he'll be all right.
So now that we've had this little backlash after CBS has run Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer yet again, do you think they're going to become skittish and not make changes, but that this will disappear in the future, that they won't play it every year like they have for literally six decades?
Yeah, literally 60 years. You're probably right. It's probably going away. We probably won't see it next year. If we do, it'll probably be on one of the smaller channels and or local channel only, but it's on its way out, I think.
I really, really hope you're wrong. Not that I watch it every year, because I don't.
Me either.
But
it's a classic, though.
I just think if we sanitize everything for everyone, then when true conflict comes along, people won't be able to handle it.
Well, that's why in America we have 1 in 5 millennials attempt suicide right now.
Wow.
It's because they don't know how to handle adversity. They don't know how to handle a challenge. And when they do, they think of, you know, this as, hey, everything is just like it is in the movies, and that's all there is to it, so I might as well give up. And it's a bad thing. They've learned how to deal by binge-watching, you know, Stranger Things and socializing through social media, so they don't know how to socialize and understand nonverbal communication when they are dealing with people. So they're beating themselves up at their own game.
And on that cheery note, I wish you the best of the holiday season, sir.
Well, Merry Christmas to you, too, and a Happy Hanukkah.
Thank you once again, John, for being on the program with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Peter.
Dr. John Huber, Chairman for Mainstream Mental Health. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0486, and you'll find links to John's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. As we celebrate the season of giving, I'd like to share a story about how one charity's efforts to practice the Golden Rule were severely tested by an ill-advised lawsuit. A Florida soup kitchen called Love Thy Neighbor has provided meals to the homeless for years. Then one day, the charity was served with a lawsuit. The reason? A business named Love Your Neighbor claimed its potential customers might be confused if the charity continued to operate with a similar-sounding name. You heard that right. Love Your Neighbor was suing Love Thy Neighbor. The charity was forced to defend itself in federal court during months of litigation. Fortunately, the charity eventually won. Yet because of all the money it had to spend, it was anything but a heavenly ending. The founder of the charity told me that the money it had to spend on lawyers could have provided meals to 40,000 people. Let's be fair, America would be much better off if we all focused more on the Golden Rule and less on using court rules to sue each other so often. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
This is your safe haven from the hard news of the day. The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio for your happy place.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about Christmas vacation ideas with travel expert Pete Trabuco. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. Here on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, The break-ins were happening night after night. Numerous businesses, all within a few blocks of each other in East Springfield, Missouri, were being targeted. Someone was creeping around with a tire iron or a crowbar, police say, prying their way inside and taking guns, a TV, crystals, and a $1,000 gold coin. Now authorities say they have their culprit, a man who lives in the neighborhood and routinely gets too drunk to remember his capers. 28-year-old Weston Reinke has been charged with 4 counts of felony burglary. Though police suspect him of several other nearby break-ins this year, Reinke, however, told police he has no recollection of many of them. Reinke admitted he had not been making good decisions, according to court documents. Police identified Reinke as a suspect through fingerprints and surveillance footage. Reinke has a distinct cross tattoo on his left calf. He's accused of breaking into at least 5 different locations. When confronted about the burglaries in the area, Reinke stated he had been drinking alcohol in excess due to problems with the mother of his child and the recent passing of his father. He claims he would drink in excess and black out. Wow. He committed at least 5 burglaries where he was blackout drunk? Imagine how successful he could be as a crook if he were sober. Yeah. A California high school teacher pleaded not guilty to several charges of child cruelty and battery after she allegedly forced a haircut on one of her students. Tulare County District Attorney Tim Ward said in a news release that 52-year-old Margaret Geisinger faces up to 3 years and 6 months in jail if convicted on all 6 counts. The science and chemistry teacher was arrested after video posted to social media showed a student at the University Preparatory High School in Visalia sitting in a chair as she cuts his hair. In the video, she is heard belting the Star Spangled Banner while cutting the boy's hair and tossing chunks behind her. After cutting the boy's hair, Geisinger grabs at a girl's long hair before the students make a run for it out of the classroom. Interesting how the entire class just sat there while she cut a kid's hair against his will and only made a run for it when she started looking for a second victim. Also, which student was recording the video? At least she didn't chase any of the students down. Clearly she knew, as a teacher, that you shouldn't run with scissors. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? As the Christmas song goes, there's no place like home for the holidays. But during the holiday season, what if you're one of those who want to get away to, say, an amusement park? Well, lucky for you, we have back on the program Pete Trabuco, a travel and theme park expert. He's the author of several books, including A Personal Guide to the Best Amusement Parks and Water Parks. And he joins us once again on the line from New Jersey. Hi, Pete.
Hello, how you doing? Hope you're doing well.
I'm doing just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. Now, I know for some who might want to get away for the holidays, if this is something that they want to do, I know it's a little late right now, but there's still the holidays, and of course there's the entire winter period. A lot of times, especially those of us who live in the north, we tend to forget theme parks during the winter months because we think winter things. So what are some of the ideas that you are considering and thinking about that people should consider when it comes to the holiday season?
Well, you know, it's not just being in a cold environment. Obviously, you would think that a lot of the amusement parks would close down and because of the weather and everything, but that's pretty much untrue. I mean, you know, and there are many places where you can actually go. We all know about, of course, Universal Studios and Islands of Adventure and the Grinch over at Dr. Seuss Land, and of course you've got Mickey's Merry Christmas over at the Disney World and everything, and they're big. They're big events. People are there. I've got relatives there right now. I've been there many times. But you also got to look at the other places, which are actually they're open not all year round, but during the holidays. One that comes to mind that you probably haven't heard of is a place called Santa's Workshop, and that's actually in the North Pole of New York State. It's actually a beautiful place just south of Lake Placid, where the Olympics was, and they do an amazing job in the park there with a lot of storybook village type stuff. Yeah, family weekends, tree parties, singing, of course, roasting marshmallows, and the cost is actually pretty inexpensive. It's $20. You have to obviously bundle up, but you know, it does get cold there. But that's a place that people don't even know about. That's on the list there. A great place, and of course, you got to go to Hershey Park. Hershey Park is in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Now it's cold there too, but you can find 50 rides that will be open this season up until the first of the year. You've got also the some of the biggest roller coasters, like the Sidewinder and the Triple Tower, will be open. And of course, it's the only place that I know of where you can actually find all 8 reindeer, and of course, number 9, Rudolph himself. There's actual live reindeer that the kids can pet and have a good time with, and it's fantastic shows as well. So, I mean, we can go on and on. There's a bunch out there, but since about 20 years ago, the amusement parks have realized, why not extend the seasons in the north, keep the places open? People love amusement parks, and they also love, you know, the holidays. It's a great time to do that. Plus, there's 4 million lights over at Hershey Park where you can do a drive-through there, so it's actually an amazing place to be.
Wow. Now, I know that when it comes to holiday seasons, travel can be a bit difficult. There's a lot of delays. There are a lot of people traveling, so that makes things a little worse. What do you say, because I know you're also a travel expert, so what do you say about some things that unfortunately you can't avoid? Like, what if your flight is canceled and you're stranded at an airport?
Well, one of the biggest mistakes that people make is if their flight gets canceled or there's a blizzard or there's something along those lines, they'll go to the counter and they'll wait on that long line where everybody else on that plane is probably doing the same thing. What they don't realize is if you call the airlines directly, call them on the phone, you know, the 1-800 number that you're given, give them your flight information, you'll probably get somebody within a couple minutes. And when that happens, you'll be able to actually book your flight through them while everyone else is waiting online and still waiting for something to open with one person behind the terminal trying to make it all work out. You've got a person, your individual person, you're kind of like in the front of the line already, and they're setting up whatever changes that need to be made. A lot of people don't do that. They pretty much think that the fastest way is go to the counter, just get there as fast as you can and try to make that. But when you combine that with 20 or 30 or 40 people ahead of you, it could be a process that doesn't work out. Whereas if you're on the phone, you immediately get somebody within several minutes of the call, and at that point you can change your airfare that way. It works out really well.
Great tip. Now, I know you're someone who travels a lot. So when the holiday season comes, do you become a homebody or are you still traveling?
Well, I try to become a homebody as much as possible, but there's some really great places that you can actually go that if you've never been. For example, nothing really beats New York City during the holidays. Of course, you've got the Rockettes, you've got the downtown area, the midtown area where you've got Broadway, and you've got, of course, Rockefeller Center and the tree. So even though I'm a homebody, I try to get up there at least once just to see what's happening at that location. And there's another amusement park that I wanted to mention. That one is actually a great place to go, and that is Silver Dollar City in Branson, Missouri. Not that far from the border, from the Canadian border, but it's actually a great place. They've got one of the most amazing shows that you'll ever see. Even though it's cold, they do pretty much, the rides are open, everybody has a great time. But to answer your question, I try to stay home every once in a while, but you know, I've been to Times Square and seen the ball drop. I've actually been to different places, you know, and of course, being in New Jersey and having relatives in New York City, I'll be spending a lot of time doing that. So, you know, it's a lot of fun, and I still like to travel and see other people and see them in the environment, the cultural environment that they're in.
I was actually just watching television earlier this week, and I saw Dolly Parton on TV, and she was talking about there's a lot of things she does at Dollywood that make it special for the holidays. Have you been to Dollywood?
Absolutely. No, yeah, absolutely. Dollywood is on my list in my book, my personal guide to the best amusement parks, roller coasters, and thrill rides. Yes, Dolly has a fantastic location. It's in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. Great rides, great attractions, and of course, being Dolly, you get the best entertainment that you will find pretty much on the planet. They do a fantastic job there. But during the holidays, they actually do it even more. It's more of a country type of a holiday celebration. Santa comes out, reindeer, lights, music, shows, and the shows are pretty much A1. It's a really great place. If you've never been there, you know, two times to go. Really, the summertime is a great time to be there, and as well as at the holidays, at Christmas time. It's you can't beat it. It's just a very nice place to go, a lot of fun, and it is a destination location for the holidays.
If you wanted to get away for the winter and you didn't want to get away for Christmas because maybe it's too late to plan it right now since we're so close to that time of the year, if someone were to put under your tree two tickets to someplace far and exotic that might have an interesting amusement park, where would that be?
Well, and does this have to be the United States, or this could be anywhere else pretty much?
Well, like I said, far and exotic, so anywhere in the world.
Well, I would like to actually go to Abu Dhabi, which is there's Ferrari in Abu Dhabi, and it's called the Ferrari World, and they've got a ride there called Formula Rusa, which is probably the fastest roller coaster that you will find on the planet. It actually goes from 0 to 150 miles an hour in 3 seconds. Inside the location, as well as outside in the desert sands, but it's really a fantastic place. That would be definitely one that I would definitely want to go to. I think it's Spa Land over in Japan has got another fantastic amusement park that does extremely well. It's just a little outside of Tokyo, and that one at one time had the tallest roller coaster in the country at 200 feet until Millennium Force. I'm sorry, 300 feet, until Millennium Force actually knocked it off over at Cedar Point in Sandusky, Ohio.
Well, I'm still getting over the idea of a roller coaster that goes from 0 to 150 in 3 seconds. That's like a natural facelift.
That is actually a facelift. And when you think about, like, our pilots on aircraft carriers, they're actually in an F-18 or an F-14, and they're getting shot off the deck at about 150 miles an hour, but they've got glass canopies. So just imagine what it's like to actually go faster than they are without a cockpit, without glasses, or without anything but just you doing pretty much the same thing within a short distance. So if you ever wanted to know what it would be like to off a cat shot off an aircraft carrier, go to these places and you'll experience that.
I think back several years to when Fabio was hit by a bird while on a roller coaster. I don't think he would survive in Japan.
That was Apollo's Chariot over at Busch Gardens. And that ride only, well, it's a good 200-foot drop, but that ride only gets to a maximum speed of about 60 or 70 miles an hour. So, yeah, this would be pretty much double that size, double that speed.
Pete, it's always a pleasure to have a chance to talk to you. Again, your book is A Personal Guide to the Best Amusement Parks, Water Parks. How can people get your book?
Well, www.petetrabuco.com, where books are sold, and, of course, through Starry Night Publishing, and, of course, on the Internet. You can find it pretty much by just Googling the book title or my name.
Pete, always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you. You have a great holiday season.
And the best of the holiday season to you and yours as well. That's Pete Trabuco, author of A Personal Guide to the Best Amusement Parks and Water Parks. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0486, and you'll find links to Pete's website, where you can order his book directly, and also links to Amazon.com, where you can order the book as well. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. I got one more story I want to share with you before we get to our idiot of the day, and that story is: a man and woman admitted in court they drove from Arizona to Wyoming with two children in the trunk of their car, 63-year-old Michael J. Fee and 31-year-old Amber L. Freudenstein. Each pleaded guilty to two misdemeanor counts of child endangerment. Circuit Judge Stephen Brown sentenced each to 30 days in jail. Sheriff's officials say a third party told them the children reported riding in the trunk for much of the 900-mile drive, while two German shepherds sat in the back seat. Fee said in court there was not enough room for everyone, so the children were relegated to the trunk. The children were about 6 and 10 years old. What I would like to know is, after the 30 days in jail, are they getting those kids back? Because if a 900-mile trunk ride through the steamy states of Arizona and Wyoming is what these kids endured, imagine what their home life must be like. Yeah. Okay, boys and girls, it's time for the moment you've all been waiting for. It's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. This stuff all presents the Idiot of the Day.
A successful heist at an electronics retail store requires careful planning and attention to detail, a fact that appears to have escaped three men in North Raleigh, North Carolina on November the 12th. That night, an employee of the store called 911 to report that three men had entered the store with semi-automatic weapons and ordered workers into the stockroom. One of them was carrying a cardboard box, which he used to load up mobile phones and smartwatches. The men also filled two crates with merchandise, which totaled more than $26,000. When the robbers left through the back door, they took the crates with them but forgot the cardboard box, which, serendipitously, sported a shipping label with an address on it. Police used the address along with a mugshot from a previous crime that matched an image on the store's surveillance video to track down 22-year-old Brian Lamont Clark and arrested him for robbery with a dangerous weapon and conspiracy to commit robbery. Now, why, oh why, would you bring to a robbery a cardboard box that has a shipping label with your address on it, but when the robbery is complete, you leave said cardboard box behind? One reason, and one reason only: you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0486. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0486. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been getting jiggy with Peter Anthony Holder and the Stuff File program, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. He's a bad mamma jamma, and after he spends some chill time in his crib, he'll be back to get down with his bad self. Word up.